Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi there, and welcome to December's episode of the Rubycoin podcast, coming to you from the top floor of Rubycoin HQ here in Dublin, Ireland. In this, the last episode of 2018, we're going to go over some of the biggest stories from the year that was, the companies from our app that impacted most upon our lives in the past 12 months, and our big predictions for 2019. So guys, the last podcast of 2018. So for this month's episode, we're just going to have a quick look back at some of the biggest stories from the market over the last year. And I suppose the best place to start is with Facebook. It's been a pretty awful year for Facebook. There was the infamous Cambridge Analytica scandal at the start of the year, and then a few more data breaches since. Guys, where did Facebook go from here?
I think it's just been a real fall from grace, particularly for Zuckerberg. I mean, you say like the Cambridge Analytica hack, it wasn't a hack.
Yeah.
people keep calling it a hack, and it wasn't. That was what was Facebook was intended for. And they've had some other minor breaches. There was the photo one last Friday, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I think the point is that once we really did hold up Zuckerberg as kind of this great business mind, even if he wasn't a very likable character, he was still this guy who created a product that the world really embraced. And, you know, thinking back even to the Instagram purchase, he was mocked back then, and then everyone had to kind of quietly apologize for mocking him when that turned out to be a great deal. It still hasn't worked out with WhatsApp yet, but I just think now he seems like now this kind of sulking kind of moaner who's just blaming everyone for everything. You know, that there was that article in the Wall Street Journal where he was blaming Sheryl Sandberg for Cambridge Analytica and blaming the media for all the negative publicity.
He said at one point Facebook was at war.
Yeah, he's
pretty strong words.
It was.
But like, that's totally against what he said in at Congress when he stood up and said, it's my company, I take responsibility. That all is just nonsense, you know?
Yeah. I think one thing from Facebook's numerous mishaps this year, Maeve, is that it was kind of, for me, and I know myself and yourself have talked about this a little bit, it was kind of like the dawning of the realization of how much data we have out there and how much information is kind of vulnerable out there.
Yeah, I mean, that makes me feel slightly exposed, you know, and concerned. Yeah. But I mean, like Rory just mentioned there, when Zuck stood up in Congress and, you know, gave his entirely disingenuous kind of apology, like, I don't really think the guy cares, you know, and maybe that's not a news broadcast that, you know, the head of a massive corporate company or that wouldn't care so much.
Yeah.
But it's the way he's pretending to care and now rolling back and, you know, slightly kind of starting to point the finger. It's not a good look.
Yeah.
And, you know, data breaches aside, like the use of Facebook at the moment for me, a lot of people are telling me they've dropped out, they've deleted. I'm nearly there, and the app is sending me pretty desperate notifications about how a peer from secondary school uploaded a new photo last Wednesday. So it's not in a good spot, and neither is Zuck.
Yeah, but Emmett, I know you talked about last year you completely deleted your presence off Facebook, but I'm sure you're a user of WhatsApp and perhaps Instagram.
Oh,
so
definitely,
we're not really getting away from them, are we?
No, I mean, I use their assets every day, probably every waking hour at some point.
Yeah.
You're right, I deleted the apps and the bookmarks off my laptop and computers, but I don't, it's not that I have turned my back fully on Facebook. I dip in now and again for self-serving purposes. WhatsApp is core to how I communicate with my people and friends and family. And of course, I have a look at Instagram now and again. I'm not all that into it. But I do believe they have to strengthen the might. I think their mission is to keep the world more open and connected. And they have the ability to acquire whatever might appear on the landscape that even alludes to that kind of mission. So whatever businesses start to connect people in a new and innovative way, they'll go there and they'll either replicate it or acquire it.
Yeah. Speaking of other kind of divisive figures from the year, we have to look at Elon Musk, I suppose.
Mave's favourite.
Mave's favourite.
Was he tweeting about how he likes ramen or something the other day?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
So outside of Tesla, well, to speak from a market perspective first, it was a big year for Tesla. They had various production goals they really had to hit this year. And in fairness, they did make it, albeit barely, but you know, at the start of the summer they made those Model 3 goals, but I think everything got a bit distracted by the antics of Elon. He got in a fight with Wall Street analysts on an earnings call, calling them boring and boneheads. he was continually attacking short sellers across the entire summer, it seems. He got into a really bizarre fight with a Thailand rescue diver. He smoked weed legally on a podcast with Joe Rogan. And then, of course, he said that he was going to bring Tesla private at $4.20 a share. Rory.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of information to just take in there. Was that all this year?
Busy year.
Was there not some kind of spat with Azealia Banks as well?
Oh, yeah, that was...
Which was way left of field.
Who's that now?
She's a musician.
All right.
And she said she was in his basement and there was, you know, some nefarious goings on.
Hold on, was that his girlfriend?
No, a friend of Brian's.
I'm all over
musician.
This story, as you can see.
Basically, James just listed a number of bizarro stories and mm-hmm. there was more.
There was way more.
And the Raymond thing. I mean, is Elon okay?
In terms of fall for graces, I don't think his was as spectacular as Zuckerberg's.
Yeah.
But probably was just kind of an eye-opener to a lot of people that, you know, as much as he is a genius of the business world and makes amazing products, that he's still a human and has the same sort of emotional triggers and probably was overworked for a while.
Yeah, definitely. I think you really need a second in command. You mentioned that before, Emmett.
Yeah, 2IC. What's kind of interesting is there's a website called comparably.com, which has taken anonymous surveys from 10 million workers in the US, 50,000 different companies on the CEO specifically. And this year, 2018, Elon Musk came, I think it was 18th or 19th in the list of best CEOs to work for from a completely anonymous rating engine. So, you know, internally, he's probably doing something right. And, you know, he says the guy who invented PayPal, SpaceX and Tesla. But, you know, definitely he's good at drawing bizarre attention on himself with his behavior outside of work. But clearly inside the confines of SpaceX and Tesla, he, his madness stroke genius is cutting through.
Yeah, well, like, it's all well and good to kind of laugh at these things, I suppose, in retrospect. But, you know, when it starts impacting upon the actual business of Tesla, you know, the SEC got involved with that 420 tweet. You know, there is a point, I suppose, where investors start to get annoyed.
Yeah, and I mean, just on the employee thing, I'm surprised he was so highly ranked because the amount of executives that seem to leave is just so worrying. You'd be like, is there something really rotten in Denmark there? Mm. But yeah, the SEC thing, I think he got off very lightly.
Yeah.
He, not only could he be removed as CEO, but he just got a slap on the wrist fine and had to give up the chairmanship and then went on to mock them openly, continuously. He did his 60 Minute interview where he said he didn't respect any of them. So I think he's gotten away with a lot of stuff this year.
So looking at the market as a whole then, I think it's fair to say that 2018 was quite a different year for the market as compared to 2017. We had the small matter of a trade war this year. And then, you know, pretty regular sell-offs throughout the year. There was a big one in February, big one in October, and there was even a big one yesterday. Yeah. How do we compare the 2 years in terms of the overall market? Was last year just an outlier, or is this year considered more of an outlier? Rory?
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of ups and downs, but I think it really was, rather than kind of a year of two halves, it was really a year of three quarters and a bad quarter at the end. The sell-offs in February was big, but it was quite quick. It was over quite quickly.
Yeah.
Or maybe it just felt like it was over quite quickly. And there's a lesson to investors. Mm. If you just let things go for a while, they probably won't feel as bad. But yeah, the last few weeks, there's just been this constant, I mean, it's kind of a coming together of so many different factors. There's interest rates rising, the trade war, this kind of worry about growth in China, worry about growth in the US, everything's kind of just happening at once, and there seems to be never a day when there's only good news.
Yeah.
There's always kind of something bad happening at some point, or some fear that's jolting the market. But like, the only thing you can do is just think about how you feel right now if you're an investor, and if you're really panicking, you probably shouldn't be investing the way you're investing. You should probably be in less risky investments, because this is how the market works. This is the kind of swings that you get when you invest in common stocks. And if you have a whole portfolio of common stocks, it's going to look quite painful at times like this. But further down the line, you'll realize that, you know, it's usually not as big a deal as it felt at the time.
Over the past 12 months, we actually had two companies in the Invest app that were acquired. Back towards the end of January or the start of February, Juno Therapeutics was acquired by Celgene in a cash deal worth about $9 billion. That was actually a 190% return from when we added them. So big win for us, I think. Then in September, Mazor Robotics was acquired by Medtronic in a deal worth $1.64 billion, which is expected to be closed early next year, I think. That represented a 27.5% return on the price we added them to the Invest app at. So two big acquisitions from the showroom.
Emmett. Yeah, they were, and both in the medical field, showing consolidation in the area, and it's a harder run for you to find a company on the cutting edge doing something brilliant that's just left to it. In order to fulfill your investment thesis, you're putting money in the anticipation of leaving it there for years or possibly decades, which was the very reason that I bought shares in Mazor. So it's no surprising that Medtronic came along and spotted what we as individual investors spotted and move in for an acquisition. Yeah. It happens. I suppose I've probably had 20 or 30 stocks acquired out of my portfolio over the years. It seemed like fate had me destined to become a Disney shareholder. I originally invested in Marvel when it was independently listed, and several years later Disney bought it. I think it was half cash, half shares. I can't quite recall, or possibly even fully shares. And then I sold my interest as part of that acquisition in Disney. Then I bought shares in Pixar. And Pixar was acquired by Disney, and same deal, I Disney shares are put into my portfolio, if you like.
Yeah.
So I've seen this happen a lot in my own investing life. It's going to happen again in the future. I can see stocks in our app that I believe could or should be a very viable acquisition target. I'm not going to list them here. But, you know, the thing about it is it's usually a quality problem. Not always. Like, for example, SolarCity was acquired soon after we added it to our app at a price below the price point at which we added it. And that was unfortunate. And the problem is the control is taken out of your hands.
Yeah.
So whether it's Mazor or Juno or something else, by the time you get news of the acquisition, the deal is done.
Yeah.
Funny that they were, well, Juno was the only pharma company we've ever added.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a great return. We had it just for over a year, and then Mazor, not a pharma company, but a medical devices company. Mm-hmm. I think you and me both had really big hopes for that company. Yeah. I was a shareholder, and I really thought it was going to be a multi-bagger for us.
Absolutely.
With that razor and blade model they had, and all the white papers they printed about how good the technology was. It was a real dig when you're still getting 27% return in a year, but
you
have to get off the roller coaster before you want to. Really,
I know. Yeah. Oh well.
Before we move on, Emmett, I have to come to you. This time last year, we were in the midst of the Bitcoin bubble, as I think we can now probably call it.
Yeah.
And you wrote an expert opinion piece at the time, giving your thoughts on the craze. And I think we can all sit back now, 12 months later, and say you might have timed that perfectly.
Yeah, it was ludicrous, the whole thing, if you ask me. I'm not saying that cryptocurrency won't emerge in the future, but the craze that was, 2017, it was a bubble in surest form, and so many different kind of real world metrics reinforced that view, such as you can't pay for stuff with Bitcoin on the sites you go to, the giant sites. We're not talking about mom and pop stores, but you could not pay at the basket at Apple or Amazon with Bitcoin, which said something about it in its pure function as a currency. So, yeah, that was well timed. But I suppose it had the benefit of having seen fever pitch before in the run-up, the dot-com run of just up until May year 2000.
Yeah.
you know, logic goes out the window. And when you start having people who know nothing about asset investing recommending certain assets to you, you have to stop and wonder. And I think here in Dublin, which is quite a distance from Silicon Valley, the younger teenagers were walking around with a crypto wallet, and as a result, they were giving advice on what cryptocurrencies to buy. And you know, you just have to stop for a moment and just consider, where is this coming from? What body of knowledge are they drawing upon, except each other? And that is, I suppose, the kernel of a bubble.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a great anecdote about Joseph Kennedy, who's JFK's dad, who said he got out of the stock market right before the Great Depression? And he said that when he knew it was good, it was a bubble when the guy who was shining his shoes was giving him stock advice.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, that turned out to be a lie. Apparently, he was insider trading, but, you know, it's a good story all the same.
Yeah, good story, yeah.
Yeah.
So they were some of the biggest stories from 2018. We're going to move on now to the companies we never talk about section. And this is where both Emmett and Rory pitch a company to us from the Invest app that they feel maybe doesn't get as much focus or attention as it deserves. Rory, we'll come to you first. What company do you want to have a chat about today?
Yeah, so, I mean, we talk a lot about global megatrends here, and one of the trends we focus on a lot is automation. And I think when you mention automation, a lot of people start thinking about robots and autonomous vehicles, but actually automation is happening right now, and the real benefits of automation are being felt in a not so obvious way. So the company I want to talk about is ServiceNow, which are a leading provider of enterprise solutions that automate services. At their very most basic, ServiceNow software, you can plug into a company's IT network. And what it can do is it'll take support tickets, basically categorize them, log them, and send them to the right technician so that IT problems get sorted out as fast as possible.
Okay.
So that's their very most basic function. But a lot of companies are employing this for really creative ways. There's a company that does the hires technicians for medical devices all across America, and they have this all automated now. So as soon as a medical device goes down, the serial number is typed into ServiceNow, and the right technician is sent there, whoever's closest who can deal with the machine. And it's really important for that stuff to be logged and to know how it was dealt with, and to ensure that it doesn't happen again, or that if there's a recurring issue that it's dealt with. So currently about 800 of the biggest 2,000 companies in the world are their clients. Okay. The average client spends $1.5 million a year for their products. They cross-sell multiple products to these clients, and that's let them increase revenue 72% on average since 2010. And they've also got a great CEO in John Donahue, who's the former CEO of eBay and Bain & Capital. So, yeah, it's a company that I thought I'd highlight this week. It's a great business, and it's been relatively strong throughout this downturn, which is a good sign. So, yeah, that's it, ServiceNow.
And what's the ticker symbol?
Now, N-O-W.
Cool. Emmett, what company do you want to shine a little light on?
Well, as you know, James, Maeve and Rory, we've all been very busy in the last week reviewing all the stocks in our showroom.
Yeah.
A vast proportion of which we're about to update our comment on in the days and weeks ahead. And in the research, yesterday I had a lock-in and spent effectively 10 hours reading through the latest investor presentations of about 20 of the stocks in our showroom. And while I initially had said to you, I think I'll talk about Gentex, as you know, just before we walked in, I said, actually, I'm changing that to you. And to you took me by surprise yesterday when I started to research the business. As a lot of our listeners know, it's the leading provider of software as a service solutions to higher education. So basically what it does is it brings new students to universities and brings universities to students and take a fee for that. So it does, as they say, a win-win-win. The college gets more students. The students get to the courses they couldn't otherwise access if they had to commute to Harvard or Cambridge or whatever.
Yeah.
And to you, make some money in the middle. So it's actually fascinating. Well, not as much fascinating, but very effective business. And I think it's been unduly punished as a result of short sellers that wrote nasty reports during the year that
you're
got everybody
a bit like
scared.
Elon Musk there.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a $3 billion business. And as I wrote in the comments soon to be updated, the caliber of 2U's clients and customers speak volumes about the pedigree of the software that they produce. So specifically, are, for example, Georgetown, Oxford in England, UCAL, Berkeley, Harvard, Cambridge are just some of the premium brands that have trusted to you to maintain their educational standards for students in a digital world. And really, they've been smashed down, but the business is growing and growing. And it has had a couple of speed bumps, but there are very, very few businesses that have not encountered speed bumps along the journey. So by 2021, the vision for 2U is to more than double the number of programs that they currently have on their platform. So that will have around 110 graduate programs, which is about 40% of their long-term target of around 250 programs. So the business today is still small based against where it is they want to get to. So there's at the moment in America, there's around the world, 3 million graduate students, in the US, who together pay around $80 billion in tuition. Now that's one big market.
Yeah.
And online enrollment accounts for around 22% of that figure. So 2U have managed to position themselves as the de facto choice for colleges who want to expand their reach and their courses to people like the four of us here in this room, where a commute to Harvard just would be too much to undertake.
Bit of a commute.
Yeah.
So that's 2U, and the ticker symbol is N.
Roy's T. Exactly. Thank you.
We've got there. Cool. So that was the companies we never talk about section. We're going on to I read a book now, but instead of just one of us talking about a book we read, we're going to talk about our favourite books from the past year. Maeve, we might come to you first. What was your favourite book you read in the last year?
Well, I wanted to pick one from our RubyCoin library,
yep.
which is an initiative that I think was set up internally here. So we buy good books that we think will, you know, inform or enlighten us or help us with our personal development. And the one that amused me the most, I think, was Nudge.
Great book.
Yeah.
Rory, I think you might have recommended it ahead of the RubyCoin Larby. And it's not a new book. It's about 10 or 11 years old, I think, right? And it's a book on behavioural economics and why humans make the clever or silly decisions that we make.
Right.
And just to dive in slightly, so there's a huge amount of, obviously, psychology and theory in it, but The example I'll give, if anyone's kind of interested in reading it, is it talks about the kind of systems of thinking that human beings have.
Yeah.
There's two main systems of thinking. One is automatic and one is reflective. An example of automatic would be when a puppy is put in your lap, how you react. So you smile and you giggle. And then reflective would be the more serious decisions, like, do I want to marry this man? Do I want to take this job?
Yeah.
And, you know, all that serious stuff.
So to swipe right and swipe left, if you go, where is that? Is that reactive or contemplative?
Do you know what, Emma? That's actually a good example of both. You know, being on the app and seeking a life partner is reflective.
Yeah, because it blends it all, doesn't it,
right
really?
Or left.
Yeah, so Match have really managed to converge those two decision points.
You're dead right. Yeah. That's an interesting example from a psychology point of view.
Yeah.
But
that's going to be in the abridged version, updated.
In Nudge, they go through the kind of cognitive biases. And look, let's stick with the dating metaphor. You know, there's herd mentality, you know, there's the status quo, there's kind of all of these kind of cognitive biases that you'll have to work through.
Yeah.
And the book is very interesting. It goes chapter by chapter through kind of different industries. It talks about the Bush administration, has a chapter on kind of junk food in schools and where it's placed and what kids reach for. And then there's a lot about finance as well, which is, I suppose, why it's, you know, with it some degree of distance linked to me and RubyCoin and us. And it's just the idea of being a self-directed investor and making sure that you're saving and nudging yourself towards those decisions. It's difficult when you could say, well, look, I'll keep this month's money and not invest it and I'll go and have a holiday. It just talks about those mental patterns that are trying to nudge you towards being slightly better.
I love books like that. I'm definitely going to read it based on your pitch. Have you found yourself checking yourself or changing a decision point, or let's say being aware of how you're making a decision or indeed reacting?
The word aware, it's given me an awareness of the things that I know myself I might need to nudge slightly harder on.
Do you know
what I mean? And I'm aware when I'm in a mental model that I know I have a habit in. So like the gym. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't happen.
But you're aware now.
It's been on my mind.
Rory, any books you like this year?
Yeah, well, the best book I read was the one you actually recommended on the pod a couple of months ago, Bad Blood, the story of Theranos. I'll talk about my second favourite book, which was called Factfulness by Hans Rosling, who sadly passed away just before its publication. And he was a Swedish physician and world health professor, and some people might know him. He did a really famous TED talk a couple of years ago where he kind of got all these figures of world health up on a giant screen and showed how wrong people were about things. Basically, he was kind of pointing out some terrible misconceptions people have regarding what we call the Western world, and I'm doing inverted commas at the moment, and the third world. And this book just really builds on that idea. So he starts the book with a series of multiple choice questions about things like female education and the rising population and child mortality rates. And you go through it kind of giving your ABC answers, thinking you probably know these things. And to be honest, I didn't do very well on the test at all. And there's a good reason for this. And the main one is that we're stuck with the same vision of certain parts of the world that people had like 50 years ago. And so this book, I thought, was a really good book. It really points out that these differences don't really exist anymore, that actually the world is a lot better than we're made to believe. And it's not really an investing book, but you know, it's always good to learn more about the world. And Rosling's a great writer, really good writer, and he gave some really good examples and talks about some cognitive biases as well, mate, that you were just talking about in Nudge. So yeah, that was one of my favourite books of the year, definitely.
What's the name again?
It's called Factfulness, and it's by a guy called Hans Rosling.
Emmett?
Yeah, I got through quite a few books this year, and I already spent some time talking about my favourite, which was and is Shoe Dog. So I won't go on much more about it, but what I will say is that before I read the book, I knew more about Kevin Plank, the founder of Under Armour, than I did about Phil Knight. And when you think about it, Phil Knight is up there with Jobs, Buffett and Gates, but in a lower tech world, but with bleeding edge branding. And, you know, when I read the book, it compounded the lesson to me that when you know a backstory, you connect at a deeper level with the brand.
Yeah.
So by reading Shoe Dog, the story of Nike is now forever fused in my mind, and it has a deeper meaning, and it therefore is far more authentic. And, you know, a good book generally is written by someone who shows their vulnerabilities, because we all relate to that. And in the book, Phil Knight talks about his vulnerabilities, from love lost to, you know, moments of truth with the business. And that's I guess why I liked it so much, because it brought home to me the true story of a man who was behind the arguably top three or five biggest brands that we've seen in the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned Steve Jobs there, obviously, in creating the story. And the book, I actually just finished reading it last weekend, fantastic book. It's called The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone by Brian Merchant. And what it is, essentially, it's about 500 pages long, but it's a complete, I suppose, encyclopedia is the best way you'd call it, of the iPhone. So this guy, Brian Merchant, he tracks down where every element, every part, every component of the iPhone we, you know, most of us carry around in our pockets comes from. And at the same time, he kind of interlinks the story of the development of the iPhone. And what he really kind of attacks, I suppose, in one way, is the whole story that, you know, Apple invented the smartphone and Apple invented all of these things, that, you know, Steve Jobs stood up when the first iPhone came out and said, we invented multi-touch, we invented this, when in fact it was, you know, nearly hundreds of years of invention, and, you know, from the most rudimentary kind of computers right up until development of the CERN research in Europe, that all of these different things came from. It's a bit of a tome, but it was one of the most mind-blowing books I've ever read.
Oh, wow.
He traveled, the author traveled across the world to see where the various elements in the phone come from. He went to a mine in Bolivia that was in the side of a mountain. He went to Shenzhen in China, where those kind of horrible, infamous factories are where the iPhones are put together. It was incredible. It, like, you know, it really makes you think about, for a device that, you know, you carry around pretty much everywhere you go, really makes you think about all the work and all the kind of cost, both human cost and, I suppose, cost to the environment and stuff that goes into these devices. Incredible story. So they were kind of some of our most popular books from the last year.
And the name of that book again,
the name again was The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone by Brian Merchant. It's in the Rubicon Library.
Did you mention that one of the elements needed for the iPhone is found in a cave in Bolivia?
Yeah, so there's this giant cave. Not cave, it's a mountain, but it's been mined so much that it's essentially, I think scientists have said, like, it's going to collapse in the next few years. It's been so mined. But they take the tin, lead and zinc out of it. Now, think Apple might say they don't, but all roads point to the plans.
There you go. So, yeah, it's,
Well, just on that point, the guy, the author, he broke down an iPhone with this, I can't remember the word, but it's a guy who kind of analyzes different metals and elements. So they destroyed an iPhone 6 and they broke it down into its elemental parts.
Wow.
And they added up the cost of every element in the iPhone, the total cost. And he guesses for an iPhone 6, the total cost of all the elements.
So how many raw elements are in an iPhone?
There was about 50 or 60, I think.
Wow, okay, yeah. Right. Well, that's higher
I'm
than
I'm
going to
lowball it.
Yeah.
20 quid.
Okay.
50 quid.
Well, I just have to choose which side I'm betting on. I'll go with 49.
$1.03.
Oh, come on. Yes. Nice, mate. Well done, mate.
$1.03 for a device.
Do I win an iPhone?
Pay. No, unfortunately not.
No, that's called margins. Meanwhile, $1,000 later, you have your new iPhone 10.
So for the next segment, instead of the usual jargon buster, we've decided to have a think about, from all the companies in the Invest App showroom, which one has had the biggest impact on us over the past year. Maeve, we'll come to you first.
Quickly. I didn't stick to the brief, I'm okay. Sorry. But I am going to list, and it was an interesting exercise, the companies that I have most used or interacted with in our showroom.
Yeah.
TripAdvisor, PayPal, Netflix, MasterCard, Apple, Disney, Twitter, Shopify, Atlassian, DocuSign and Match.
And how many are you invested in?
Do you know what, James? About half of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the kind of ones from my personal and professional life that were top of mind from our Invest app, and I'm invested in about half of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very good. And just to tweak the question a little, which of those could you least live without?
Disappointingly, I asked myself that, Emmett, and it's Twitter.
Twitter?
I think I might be addicted to Twitter.
Wow. Ahead of PayPal, ahead of Match.
It's the first app I open every day.
Really?
I only realised recently.
I get that. Rory?
The company that had the biggest impact on my life was Facebook.
Yeah.
Because I'm no longer on it.
Uh-huh.
And it's been great.
when did you leave?
I left just after, well, I haven't actually deleted my account, but I don't use it at all. Mm-hmm. And I've deleted the apps off my phone. And yeah, I think it was just after the Cambridge Analytica thing came out. I think I always knew that Facebook was mining my data for something, but I didn't realise how kind of dark it was and how easily it could be weaponised. So yeah, that was my company that had effect on me in a positive way.
Well done.
Emmett?
Well, Apple and Amazon, of course, because I have an Apple phone and I stare into it more time than I prefer to admit. And Amazon, interestingly, was the first time I think I did all my shopping this year on Amazon.
For the holidays?
Yeah, for Christmas.
Or just in general.
For anything I need, pretty much.
Okay.
With one or two items of clothing as an exception, I think Amazon had the full share of my wallet for those.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was
the first.
Don't use Amazon.
But to go somewhere a little more original, rather than saying Apple and Amazon, which I think would be 90% of the world's answer, I think Atlassian, you know, we manage our business with Atlassian products. I manage my thought process with Trello, one of the Atlassian tools. Mm. Most of us manage our projects internally here in RubyCoin with Trello, and I know that the development team use Jira and Confluence and all those other tools that Atlassian produce, which frankly I wouldn't recognize if I tripped over them, but I do think Atlassian's Trello is just one of the most wonderful productivity tools, and therefore it gets the slightly less obvious tap from me.
Yeah, well, like Confluence and Trello are huge things in here. Atlassian was actually my one too, because with our designer, John Sherwin, I send my whatever I need over to him on that, and that's, well...
And it appears.
It appears. It appears magically.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody in Airbnb, and I was saying to her how Atlassian is a big part of our life here in RubyCoin, and she said to me, no, I've never heard of it, but as soon as I listed Confluence, Jira, and friends, she was like, oh yeah, I wouldn't like to put words in her mouth, but it sounded like it was the backbone of a lot of what Airbnb does.
Okay, so before we finish up this episode, we're going to quickly get to our elevator pitches. This is where both Emmett and Rory have 30 seconds to pitch a company to myself and Maeve, and then we select the best pitch. Last month, you guys actually pitched a bull and bear case for the marijuana industry. So we thought we'd do something similar again this month, seeing as it's the last episode of 2018. So, guys, you're going to give me and Maeve your big pitch for 2019. So, I suppose it's kind of a prediction or
But not necessarily related to a stock.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry. Yeah, okay. So it can be stock, industry, It could be as crazy as you want.
Right.
Rory?
Will I go first?
After you.
30 okay. seconds.
No, come on, it can't be 30 seconds. It's got to be, this is the whole of 2019 we're talking about. Okay, so I think most of us know the acronym AWS, which stands for Amazon Web Services. However, not many people have heard of AMS, AAP, or AMG, but these are all acronyms related to Amazon's rapidly growing advertising business. And it's important because for years now, Amazon has really been stretching its legs in search. In fact, at the moment, it's the world's biggest product search engine. And that means that there's an awful lot of money to be made in advertising. So yeah. It's estimated in the US this year, advertisers spent $4.5 billion on Amazon's platform. And that accounts for 4% of all the digital spending that's going to happen in the US this year. That makes them the third biggest digital ad platform in the US. Now, they're still miles away from Google and Facebook, but they're growing really rapidly. And I think the reason they're going to continue to grow rapidly is because, one, when you're on Amazon, you're actually shopping for something already. So when Amazon advertises to you, it's actually more of a suggestion, or you think it's more of a suggestion than an advertisement.
Yeah.
And two, you're at very little risk of having your brand associated with something controversial or negative, which you are a lot of on Facebook,
Google. Yeah.
So my prediction for 2019 is that we're going to be talking a lot more about Amazon as an advertising business.
Okay, interesting. I like that.
I'm in the same ballpark insofar as it's a giant mega trend. Like, we've acknowledged that 2019 is really only 2.5 weeks away. So yeah. If we can't see the thing now, it's unlikely to be a thing.
Yeah.
So I'm going with the one product that gave me the biggest shock in the year. Like, the first time I saw an iPhone was, whatever, 10 years ago. And the minute I saw it, I wanted one. And this year, when I got delivery of the Oculus by Facebook in May, it had a similar effect on me. And I think my prediction for 2019 is Oculus, or at least VR headsets, will go past a tipping point and become a thing that's used far, far more in people's home and business lives. I'm not saying we'll all have an Oculus or equivalent headset by the end of 2019, but I think that in the year ahead, if you have not tried VR, I think it is the year that you will try VR, and most likely will buy a headset if you're of that demographic, because it is far more advanced than even I anticipated when I took the delivery of the Oculus. So I think the next engine of growth for Facebook, which we opened this podcast with, will be Oculus. And, you know, the Oculus Go, which I bought, was a $200 device. Most people can afford that. And when they try it, I think between the price point and the wow factor, we're going to see absorption.
Cool. So, Maeve, which pitch?
Well, I had a shot, which means I had a go or a try of a headset when it was in here. I don't know if it was your VR headset or maybe your head of development, Alessia's. And I got to sit downstairs and chill out downstairs in one of our break rooms with a couple of like neon fish underwater for 10 minutes. So I think I might go with at your pitch.
Okay, thank you.
I think I might go with that. Yeah, although, Rory, you have me interested and kind of convinced, but I'm not sure. Advertisements, ooh, evil.
Facebook, we were
talking about. It's a lesser of two evils, really.
This is true.
I'm going to go with Amazon, I think. I think Jeff Bezos has done pretty much everything else. It's probably quite feasible that he'll bring Amazon that way.
Are we going to Giles for the tiebreaker?
Giles,
me? Yes!
Yes!
Giles has picked Rory again.
Yes, again. That's why I pay Giles.
So that's about it from us for 2018 on the Rubicoin podcast. But before we go, we've some exciting changes to tell you about that are coming in the new year. Firstly, we've actually decided to change the name of the podcast too. Can I get a drum roll, please? Stock Club. Hey. So from 2019 onwards, the podcast is going to be called Stock Club. I think we'll have a chat about where the name Stock Club came in the first podcast for the new year.
By the way, you just blew our entire sound budget for 2019 on that.
Secondly, and perhaps more importantly, we're actually going to be recording the podcast twice a month from now on. So you guys will start to hear a lot more from our investing team in 2019. And while we're on the subject of new things too, actually, I just want to mention that we also have a really cool ebook coming out in the new year. But again, we'll tell you a little bit more about that in January. Until then, if you have any questions or any topics that you want us to discuss on the brand new Stock Club podcast, make sure to get in touch. You can reach us on Twitter or Facebook, leave a comment in the podcast episode itself, message us through either the Learn or the Invest app, or email us at pod@rubicoin.com. That's pod@rubicoin.com. And as always, there's plenty of new things to check out in the Invest app this month. December's Star Stock of the Month, and there's a new expert opinion piece coming this week too. Thanks everyone for joining us on the Rubicoin podcast this year, and we'll see you in 2019 for plenty more of investing chats from myself, from Emmett, Rory and Maeve. Happy New Year.
Happy holidays.
Happy Christmas.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.